Well, good morning. My name is Michael McCusker. As you have probably already guessed, we are coming in the last laps of our horse race pledge drive, our early spring pledge drive, a one-week only gala. And I have a goal. I will not really tell you what it is. I will just simply tell you it's in the zero zeros, much more money than I've ever made for a half hour in my life. And I have already a couple of pledges before I even started the program. Susan and her husband Chris from Seattle got a new membership. And, oh, by the way, they are longtime supporters of public radio. And muchas gracias, domo arigato gozaimasu. And Murph. He also pledged, and he and I share the same birth date with, of all people, Bill Clinton, but also Coco Chanel and Orville Wright and his sister Kate. And thinking about the pledge drive, I thought that rather than dedicating my pledge this spring pledge drive to my program, which I decided was personal boosterism, I was planning to announce it was to be for a particular broadcaster's program to show my support and admiration. Then I thought about another person's show and how much I like it, and again another and other programmers whose ways of thinking about music or art or community and political affairs enrich my knowledge and appreciation. So I changed my mind and decided that the only real fair thing to do is pledge my own program, which might need more help than the others anyway. And I'd like to read along those lines something I wrote, so I have to make the disclaimer that this might be my opinion, and my opinion only in the universe and the cosmos and however many universes there might be. But today I'm gambling that this is not mine. I want all you listening to call and pledged money for this radio station. And that's what this story is about. I've rewritten it a number of times and read it on the air in its different forms, its different evolutions. Community Radio, Mouth of the Columbia, and I start with a quote from Harriet Baskus, KMUN's first station manager. KMUN as a community radio station here in the Pacific Northwest shares with community stations worldwide the themes of democratization of communications, of as wide a community participation as possible, and of creating an accessible forum for the exchange of cultural and political ideas. And that was Harriet Baskus. Community Radio, the Mouth of the Columbia. KMUN, the singular public radio station on the Oregon coast, celebrates its 27th birthday on April 17th, squeezed in between the 199th birthday of Astoria, which is April 12th, the 98th anniversary of the Titanic disaster, which is April 14 and 15th, the midnight time, and a commemoration of the start of the American Revolution 235 years ago on April 19th, 1775. Radio Free Columbia Pacific, the mouth of the Columbia River, has been on the air since April 17th, 1983. Broadcast from the Tillicum House near the Astoria Riverfront, KMUN reaches north into Washington and south and east along the Oregon coast and into the coastal mountains. KMUN operates through a subscription economy and is plugged into the world via satellite and internet programming. This quantum lurch into 21st century broadcast technology is expensive and controversial and is not paid for by the usual advertisements for the banal and botulistic. KMUN depends primarily upon revenues provided by listeners and functions as a nonprofit entity. KMUN offers just about everything a radio station can attempt to do and operates daily on the cultural edge where mega media fears to follow. It broadcasts an eclectic smorgasbord of imaginative, provocative, exotic, and occasionally dreadful programming. It is seldom bland or boring. KMUN is not robot radio. KMUN, like most public or eccentric radio stations, is at the far left of the FM dial. The left side of the dial has for years been casual, even libertine, similar to the early years of computer internets when they were wild and free before commercial competition began coveting the wide-open cyberspaces. The open range of the lower FM is being crowded with radio imperialists who wish to drive away the little or nonprofits. These infotainment mega-mediocrities desire to dominate every segment of electronic communication. They already have the pulp media. And force the change from participatory free and easy to so-called professionally staffed, market-oriented, expurgated, and insipid commercial radio. The people who chase a buck tolerate no other purpose in life. Their attitude toward public radio is to swallow it whole. The background is nothing less than worldwide domination of infotainment fought over by huge, ambitious commercial media cartels. Profits promise to be as astronomical as the competition for the money is fierce and merciless. No place for compassion or even sensibility, only relentless combat in a corporate world war that will destroy the media village to rule it. KMUN and its satellite stations, KTCP, Tillamook, and KCPB, Warrenton, is obviously small fry, a mouse underneath the feet of rampaging rhinoceri. Yet the large consequence trickles down to the least considered. Masking blatant greed with hypocritical ideological rubric, commercial media moguls attack public radio and television as liberal, socialist, and elitist, a rather insoluble mix. Since the terrorist attacks of 9/11/2001, a whiff of unpatriotic, even traitorous, have been also attached. If it were up to the Federal Communications Commission, only Lars Larson, the local Rush Limbaugh clone, and Mantovani would be the standards of radio broadcasting. Sex and shock radio in particular convulse the FCC into apocalyptic frenzy, and the commission is not especially fond of the First Amendment, regarding it as too liberal and libertine, and in this phobic riven era would desire to censor all but officially gurgitated information about the two dragged out wars that are ostensibly fought against Islamic terrorism, not to mention hobbling the public's right to know the true account of the nation's economic failure and some intelligible reasons for bailing out the villains responsible with the taxes of their victims. It is unfortunate that many people agree with the FCC. They seem to feel there is already too much liberty in America incorporated, that it disrupts the sacred American dream of everlasting purchasing power and blessed consumption, and that it espouses bizarre ideas and equally esoteric lifestyles that threaten to bewitch, bother, and bewilder them. Commercial radio is, of course, no problem. It doesn't wish to disturb or offend anybody, but instead projects a boundless Land of Oz and Harriet, easily attained with master charge. A few chilling commercials exemplify the dismal wasteland on the AM and upper end of the FM dial, advertising motels in which no one is surprised, or radio stations that just say the same thing about their programming. Nothing new, imaginative, or provocative. Just the same old twaddle about adolescent love and tears and car crashes to ensure perpetual cranial remission and pimply midlife orgasms. Rather than hands-on radio, the commercial stations reduce their listeners to consumers and treat them as empty-headed children amuck in toy stores. Controversy, original ideas, and experimental broadcasting are anathema to commercial radio, which depends instead upon innocuous pablum focused on a primordial mental range to hype the unnecessary and the indigestible. The endless saturation of high-pitched patter put out by commercial media sugarcoats the brain. The inane music and schlock squeezed grudgingly in between insipid commercials is hardly memorable enough to interfere with the dense airwave of consumer capitalism. The pervasive influence of advertising is much greater than the more ballyhooed TV violence or shock radio. Listeners and viewers are prodded several times an hour to purchase and consume a bewildering variety of products that purport to satisfy every craving or longing, every passion and desire. Advertising blends into a general perception of life, no longer separate pitches to purchase individual products, but instead a miasmal cultural warp. An unconscious assumption of life as advertised overtakes the sense of life as it really is, attempting to mold and define whoever is within range of its brain-challenged contagion. The mainstream media has been more than usually banal since 9/11. Today is the 8.5-year anniversary. In its jingoistic frenzy of unquestioning, flag-waving, chauvinistically patriotic fervor, commercial media, much more than the Constitution, follows the flag. Its ambition is to be the new world media order of global communications empire. Commercial media is allied with the political and religious right in its wish to pamper the American brain as a willful child and de-synapse its thought weaves while cleansing it of reason and maturity. Public and listener-sponsored media, such as KMUN and its sister parent station, KBOO, in Portland, intend the opposite, devoted to stretching and amplifying the American brain. This is anathema to commercial media, whose only purpose is to sell products. Corporate capitalism in league with political and religious ultra-conservatism shuns diversity, though the contradiction between sensual materialism and ecumenical moral values might ultimately be disharmonious to the alliance. Public broadcasting does not intend to remanufacture its listeners and viewers. Cradle-to-grave consumerism is neither its means nor its ends. Instead, it attempts to counter the trend of perpetual adolescence with appeals to thought and intellect that are serious and varied and shaped to adult responsibility in an acceleratingly complex and corrupt democracy. American society undervalues endeavors that do not seek profit. The bottom line of America is the bottom line. From childhood, most Americans are taught that money and its purchase power are society's vitality and the only true pursuit of happiness. Yet there are among the busy, self-interested population many who wish for generous community interaction and equity rather than couch potato apathy and home shopping. Their voices seem lost on the floor of the national stock market and are at present shoved aside. KMUN reflects a few of those voices. A small radio station at the bottom of the FM dial in a far-off corner of the nation. But it is here, on the air, where incredible varieties of ideas incubate and are sounded. The problem with community radio is also one of its most attractive features. Instead of commercial sponsors who buy airtime and impose their babbitry upon the content of programs, KMUN depends upon a community of listeners for financial survival. They are KMUN's and KBOO's lifelines. That is why programmers, virtually all of them unpaid volunteers, grovel and beg during pledge drives. Big money radio broadcasts for big bucks. Public radio scrounges for loose change to stay on the air. Community radio stations like KMUN are always looking for a dollar so they can broadcast. It is a listener-sponsored station that depends on its funding primarily from listeners, which is why its listeners are subjected a couple of times a year to promotions, pitches, pleas, and whines for new and old members to pledge cash. Also puts on fundraising benefits with local and traveling musicians and performers, and for more than a decade sponsored a famous auction. Silence on radio is known as dead air, which, if committed, is broadcasting's most unpardonable blunder. Radio created the demand for every picosecond, which is 1/1,000,000,000th of a second, filled with noise and insistent din. No time is granted to reflect on anything heard the previous picosecond. Dead air is more truthfully the shock of not finding a familiar and perhaps favored station at its usual spot on the radio dial. The line of communication is tenuous and expensive. Listeners argue about the cost and value of the satellite menus as well as the local venue. But that is what community radio is all about, undaunted by mega media and the self-interested cynicism that underlies our bottom-line society. Think universally, act locally. A majority begins with one. What a person does, reads, listens to, and thinks about form the character and ideas necessary, not only for a personally gratifying life, but one that assists in alleviating the poverty or oppression of other lives. Perhaps that is too heavy a burden and too extravagant a promise to place upon a radio station like KMUN. Yet it is a voice that not only attempts to reflect a community, but also to inform it, to present ideas, thoughts, and opinions that commercial media finds unprofitable and thus shuns as if they were diseases. Ironically, despite patently false claims by corporate mega media that it alone represents democracy and the First Amendment, a small public radio station like KMUN depends upon true democracy to survive, and it does survive because ordinary citizens keep it alive. It is essential ordinary citizens receive the squalid truth of the past decade of this new century millennium, and especially the so-called war on terrorism this country is mortally engaged in, as well as the recession depression caused by our own malignant financial institutions. Only through diversity, debate, and real broadcast independence will the truth be discovered. Only through free and uncensored information are we able to gauge the validity of our purpose and the true consequences of our actions. Radio waves beam out beyond Earth into galactic space. Humanity's reputation might well rest on which signal reaches other sentient life first. Lars Larson or KMUN, gutsy and freewheeling, radio free Columbia Pacific. And that is something I wrote, and that is my pitch for our pledge drive. This is what this station is. And I'd like to read something also that I wrote. It's sort of about spring. I called it Silent Spring. And it starts with a poem by my best friend of friends, now deceased, Arthur Honeyman. Clamoring soul caught groveling betwixt lunar eclipse and hail bop. Eternal gratitude sweeps the cosmos as all existence nonchalantly whispers, it is nothing. We are what we have wrought. Our home planet's real problem for survival is what we have done with it. For example, we have made the sun, beloved Sol, the giver of life, our enemy, its warmth and light our death, because our industry has torn holes in the thin fabric of upper atmosphere ozone that protects us from lethal ultraviolet rays intermixed with beneficent sunlight. The rays screened by ozone are precisely those that are absorbed by DNA and cremate cells. Plankton and other organisms that live near the ocean surface are zapped in minutes by increased ultraviolet light, and farm crops are critically damaged. Without sufficient ozone, almost any exposure to sunlight will have shattering effects on the human population. One form of skin cancer, melanoma, currently results in death to about 25% who contract it. Of course, being burned up by the sun is only one of the many methods humanity has devised to obliterate itself and its earthly environment. The variety is exotic. Nuclear, biological, or chemical warfare can put an abrupt end to us, of course. But our self-destruction will more likely be a long strangulation or baking from toxic pollutants that we have poured into the land, sky, oceans, and rivers, which return as acid rain and killer smog, not to mention such other byproducts as poisoned or irradiated soil and drinking water. We have pummeled and plundered our home planet as if it offered an inexhaustible feast without charge or cleanup. but the consequences of our careless and excessive self-indulgence are converging. The funniest thing about choking on our effluence and affluence is that we think we are so smart. We think we have overpowered nature after centuries of pitiless struggle and are now able to crack the planet with our power. We don't want to give up the good life, the modern world of appliances and virtual reality. We ignore or trivialize warnings that we are fouling our nest, behaving with the hubris that afflicted the builders of the unsinkable, and that's in quotes, Titanic, which collided with an iceberg one April night 98 years ago. Our long feast on Earth's flesh is giving us gas, however. Mother is biting back. Our proximity to extinction is not from any single cause or danger or combination of them, but because we seem so helpless to undo the damage or change direction. Our paradox is that the good life is produced by methods that threaten all life. Our bountiful civilization is based on processes that threaten to obliterate it. We have built a global greenhouse and we dwell within. Greenhouse gases are emitted by human activity and magnify heat radiated back to Earth from an invisible ceiling structured by chemicals released by the use of fossil fuels, pesticides, and fluorocarbons that also eat away the upper-level ozone. The weather heats up, particularly in the summers that are hot and dry. Desertification is more common and droughts longer and more frequent, resulting in recurrent famine. But the winters are colder and wetter near the poles. Polar, tropic wind systems increase as the tropics get hotter and the poles colder, as evaporation in the swelter zones causes increased winter rainfall, longer and colder winters, and gradual buildup of polar ice sheets. Before that, however, some predictions suggest the oceans will rise as the polar caps warm up in summer and most coastal ports and cities will be drowned. The potential upheaval and chaos to human society is immense and unfathomable. So what can we do about our danger? What will we do about it? Our problems are so vast and complex, the solutions are almost impossible to agree upon. Yet postponing answers and action leads almost always, as has been said about racism, to denial and rejection of the problems and thus their solutions. The byproducts of our ways of life are of less concern than our unwillingness to reverse their harm. We have to stop abusing Earth, but we find infinite rationales for continuing to beat it up. We know how to break the panes of our greenhouse jail, stop clear-cutting Earth's remaining forests and replant deforested areas, reduce eventually to zero reliance on fossil fuels in favor of non-polluting energy sources, stop using toxic defoliants that in half a century have been absorbed by everything. Strong measures to reverse direction are crucial. More than anything else, the most immediate and necessary measure is a change of attitude. The terms of our survival are quite simple, despite the complexities necessary to ensure it. If we have the moxie to save ourselves, we might survive. If we don't, we won't. Think of it this way. The steady eradication of the world's tropical forests threatens not only the world's oxygen supply, but also threatens to rid the northern hemisphere of most of its birds. Each spring, fewer birds return from the south. Almost 200 bird species of North America alone are threatened with extinction. The rainforests are hosts to half of all bird life. Between 20 to 30 million birds fly south each autumn, which is the most extensive migration of creatures on Earth. If the deforestation continues unchecked, future springs will go unsung. And future comets might fly past a silent and empty world, as all existence nonchalantly whispers, "It is nothing." That last quote from Arthur Honeyman and the poem with which I started out this article, Silent Spring, which I must say is keeps up the disclaimer that this is my opinion and my opinion only in the entire cosmos. And I'd like to add that to a letter I have just written to the Daily Astorian, which might or might not print it. To the editor, The people of Iceland have shown us how democracy works. They have refused through a referendum to pay for the folly of their banks. Why haven't the people of the United States shown the same democratic spirit, rather than docilely submitting to the giveaway of trillions of public tax money to the American banks and financial institutions that have caused the worldwide recession and impoverished millions of ordinary Americans? Of course, Iceland is considered the world's oldest existing democracy, after the old Greeks who gave us the word. The USA is, by comparison, a Yankee Doodle come lately. Yet we stridently brag we are the primo democracy that everyone else should emulate. In truth, we the people seem to be little more than cash conduits for banks, quote, too politically connected to fail, unquote, whose financial policies paradoxically decimate prospects of even a decent living for the average citizens whose taxes bail them out. The dismal hypocrisy is what a friend used to call socialism for the rich, capitalism for the poor. The public treasury is being exhausted to maintain not only the vast wealth of those who have shattered the family finances of a majority of Americans, but to also subsidize further criminal financial behavior that will lead to more economic disaster. The people who could really use their own money for basics such as food, housing, and health care, especially the millions rendered destitute from job loss and home foreclosure caused by the recession depression, are instead caught in a circular process of propping up mega-wealthy banks, corporations, and individuals who seem to think they can plunder the public purse forever. One might regard the involuntary and undemocratic bailout by American taxpayers as a contemptible theft of the public trust. And that is a letter I wrote just the other day to the Daily Astorian, which, again, might or might not print it. And I'd like to close this program again on a pitch for KMUN, written by Harriet Baskus, the first station manager. And she wrote this a number of years ago, back, as a matter of fact, the same year KMUN came on the air. And she starts with the quote, "Info Baskus, information is a right and not a privilege." I traded a KMUN window sticker and two beers for the French version of a Canadian radio station's pin my first day as a member of the American delegation to the World Conference of Community Radio Broadcasters. This first World Conference in Montreal was community radio's way of marking 1983 as World Communications Year, which was declared by the United Nations. More than 600 community radio broadcasters met in Montreal to explore and document the global community radio system. Participants represented Community Radio, North America, People's Radio, Latin America, Free Radio, Europe, and Educational Radio, Africa. All ways in which separate groups define what they are doing with radio. The common theme throughout the many panels and workshops was that community radio programming involves providing a voice for the local listening community. Our stations use radio as a vehicle for expression of our local cultures, our political ideas and ideals, and sometimes for just good fun and entertainment.